Hello, hello, and welcome back to Generation Slay, the podcast where I interview the Gen Z creators, innovators, and entrepreneurs who are absolutely slaying it in their fields. I am your ever-present, ever-hyperactive host, Emma. I have, in former lives, been a fashion blogger covering New York Fashion Week as press. I have been a youth consultant for various brands, specifically focused on Gen Z and digital market trends. Currently, I am a recent graduate of college, actively trying to find my place in the world and how I will survive through all of this craziness. Regardless, though, this podcast is not about me. I just love checking in with you all every week. I hope that you're all holding up at least kind of okay, given the present circumstances. I mean, I think we're all just really trying to do our best here. And I know that, you know, us entrepreneurs and creators and super active people online sometimes face different issues than, you know, the average young person does, and especially more than the average adult does, which is, you know, situations where we may get burned out, we may get super overwhelmed just because of the sheer amount of content and information we're constantly consuming. And I know, at least for me, speaking from personal experience, I feel more responsible than ever to be consuming as much content as humanly possible, to be as active online as possible, because I do have the bandwidth for that, and I can make room and time for that, and I should be, because I should be using my platform for good, especially right now when there's a lot of bad out there. So I know, or at least I'm pretty sure, that a lot of you are probably in the same headspace, and I commend you for that. I really love the work that I see a lot of you doing. You all know I follow you, I love you. So I love that you're doing what you're doing. Make sure that when and if you can, you're taking a second, you're taking a breather for yourself. I think that's just such an important thing that I need to remember every once in a while. And I hope you guys are too, because at the end of the day, you know, we can only do as much as... Because at the end of the day, we can only do as much as our brains and body allow us to. And if we overwork ourselves, if we allow ourselves to get burned out and overwhelmed and exhausted, we just can't do that work anymore. So keep that in mind, please. Try your best to take care of yourselves during this crazy, crazy, unprecedented time. And hopefully, you know, this podcast, despite, you know, my ramblings in the beginning every week, serves as a little respite from the world and serves as inspiration and motivation and a form of connection when we're all still, for the most part, stuck in our houses. And, you know, lucky for you guys, lucky for me, I was fortunate enough to connect and get to chat with James Wellemeyer. And that's the interview that you guys will be listening to this week. James is a freelance journalist and a student at Columbia University. Typically, he covers and writes about tech, social media, online trends, Gen Z. Obviously, you know, that's our shtick around here, so we love it. We're here for it. Among the topics he's written about, he's talked about our culture's obsession with AirPods, Gen Z's love for spontaneous FaceTiming, and the teens who are bringing politics to Instagram. On top of all of that, you know, he's interned at The Hill, The Washington Blade, and Market Watch. And currently he regularly writes about social media and influencers for Business Insider Prime. I had such a wonderful time having this conversation with James. We had it a few months ago towards the start of this pandemic. So just keep that in mind, because obviously our conversational topics are a bit more geared around, you know, early April time. But I really do think that it was an incredible conversation for me to have. And I feel like I learned so much, and I just love having conversations about influencer and marketing spaces and how Gen Z is working with tech and social media. And I think right now, especially, it's more relevant than ever, and we can all use some takeaways. So yeah, without further ado, enjoy the episode.
Hi, James. I am so excited to have you on Generation Slay today. And just to kick things off, can you tell me and tell the audience who you are, what you do, what you care about, just a little background info?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. So I'm a freelance journalist. I'm based in New York right now, and I'm also a student at Columbia University. And typically I focus on writing about social media and social media influencers and kind of how Gen Z and millennials are using social media to push a different narrative or how they're making money online in unconventional ways.
Okay, so obviously with Generation Slay, we love a good internet focus on Gen Z.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely get into that a little bit more, but I'd love to just hear about how you got into writing in the first place and then how you got into freelancing, because I know that is a difficult field to start to learn about and kind of get over that initial bump.
Yeah. So in high school, I was interested in journalism and I started writing for my high school newspaper. And then ultimately, when it came time to apply for editor, I was like, I really want to be the editor of the paper. So I applied for that position and I ended up being the editor-in-chief of my high school paper. And then right after graduating high school in 2018, I thought, do I want to go immediately to college or do I want to try to build some sort of base, some sort of career in journalism and then go to college after? So I ended up taking a gap year and I kind of decided to do that pretty late. I think a lot of people tell their college that they're taking a gap year while they're still in high school. I was really lucky and my school allowed me to do it, even though I emailed them in the summer. But what I did over the summer right after high school is I ended up emailing like probably 50 to 75, maybe even more, maybe even 100 different publications across the country. And I sent articles I'd written for my high school paper. I said, hey, I was editor-in-chief for my high school paper. These are some things that I wrote. And is there any chance you're taking interns in the fall? Because I really want to do a year off school where I start to build some sort of career in journalism. Would it be like, do you have an internship program? And a lot of them responded, no, we don't have an internship program. A lot of them didn't respond at all. But I was really lucky because the Hill newspaper, thehill.com, which is like a political focused, newspaper, they did respond and they're like, hey, yeah, we do have an internship program. We'd love to interview you for it. So I ended up getting offered an internship position at the Hill. And that was crazy because I think I got the offer in August, essentially right before I was supposed to start school. And I was really lucky that I emailed my school and they were like, yeah, this sounds like a crazy opportunity. Of course, you can take a gap year. So it was kind of a really unconventional and really lucky situation that I even got started in journalism in the way I did. So I'm really grateful for that. And then after I got the offer at the Hill, I moved to DC for the year and started writing at the Hill. And obviously, I was writing a lot of political stories. I was going to congressional hearings, listening to like Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris and writing what they were saying when I was just 18. So that was again, so crazy, and I'm so privileged for that opportunity. But I kind of realized that as much as I love writing about politics and as much as I love politics in high school, I wanted to write about my generation and kind of the way that Gen Z is using the internet to do something different than like previous generations who didn't have access to the internet. So the way to do that wasn't necessarily through The Hill, because everything I was being assigned at The Hill, all basically all my assignments, they were all related to politics. And that was great. I loved that, but I wanted to do this as well. So I thought, like, perhaps in addition to writing for The Hill, I could start to freelance on the side. The problem was, is I only had experience writing stories about politics. So it's hard for me to find an editor and be like, hey, I want to write this story about Instagram and what these people are doing on Instagram. And it's unlikely that editor would respond yes if I have no experience writing about social media before. So the first story I wrote freelance was for the Huffington Post. And I thought, maybe I could write a story about Gen Z and social media that also relates to politics. And then when I'm pitching them the story, I could say, hey, I have all this experience writing about politics. I'm an intern at The Hill, but I want to write this other story. And then maybe they'll listen because I have experience writing about politics and the story is also about politics. So I remember what the story was. It was a story about two girls who started these two different Instagram accounts. And each Instagram account was started right after Trump became elected, and they focused on, they're kind of like activist Instagram accounts. They have political posts, social justice type posts. And one of them had over 100,000 followers, and the other one had about half 100,000 followers. And what I was most impressed with was how quickly they gained that following. It was kind of, in the span of like less than a year, they had each gained like thousands and thousands of followers on these accounts. So I wrote, obviously, I reached out to an editor at the Huffington Post, and I really did not expect to hear back. But I did, and they were interested in the story, and I wrote about like kind of the political posts they were doing. And then also, I got into how they were using the accounts to do other things in their lives. So for example, one of the two girls, her account Intersectional Femme, which is now, I'm pretty sure it's now been deleted. But she was the one who had like 100,000 followers. And in addition to posting political and activist posts, she was also selling ads on the page and using those ads to pay for her college tuition later on. So I wanted to highlight that in the way that the teens were using the pages to do, the way that they were making money online in a way that previous generations probably couldn't have imagined.
It was so smart of you to kind of make that combination for a story so that you could edge yourself into a new beat, per se. And I absolutely love that. But given that, you know, your first two sets of experience were the school paper and then interning for The Hill, where it sounds like you got direct assignments.
Yeah.
How did you learn how to find the right editor for a pitch, how to write a pitch email?
Yeah.
Because I know that's so hard to figure out on your own.
And I think the first thing I want to say about freelancing as well, before I get into that, is like, don't be discouraged if you don't hear back, because a lot of the times I don't hear back. I still don't hear back. But I think that, like, in terms of finding the right editor, it's important to do research on a publication and see what editor edits what. So the key, like, I would avoid sending an email to just like five editors at the Huffington Post and hoping one of them responds. Like, it's better to research, this editor focuses on politics and also focuses on like stories related to social media. I mean, that would be ideal, but if there were an editor that focuses on those two things, that would be the editor to send the story to. Whereas I definitely used to just see how many emails I could find for a certain publication and send my story to all of those emails and hope that one of them would respond. But I started to realize that they could see that I was sending the story to 10 different people, and they could see that I hadn't done any research, because if I'd done research, I would know the correct editor to send it to. And sometimes the editor's email isn't public, and that's a difficult situation. But I've definitely DM'd people on Twitter and say, hey, I couldn't find your email, but I have a pitch for a story. What's your email? And that can be effective as well. But in terms of finding the right person, I definitely say you want to find the right editor at a certain publication. You don't want to just email as many editors as possible at a publication. And then you also want to make sure the story is relevant to the publication. So I know Huffington Post, they do a lot of stories about millennials. They do a lot of stories about Gen Z. And they're also, I'd say, a very political publication for a news outlet. And they have a rather leaning base. So I thought this is a story they'd be interested in, because it's about two teen girls who are both left-leaning and how they're using Instagram to publicize their views and also make money. So I was like, this story screams Huffington Post, so I'm going to pitch it to Huffington Post. So that's another important factor in freelancing, making sure that the publication you're pitching to is appropriate for the story you're pitching. And then in terms of the email itself and what you want to write to them in that email, you don't want to make it too long, but you also don't want to make it too short. So it's hard to find a balance, but I'd say that you want to describe your story in less than 250 words, if possible. Because the reason for that is the editors are getting so many pitches every day, and they'd rather read a concise pitch and get an idea of what your story is than read the story itself. And then you also want to say who you would talk to for the story, what your sources would be, and how you would get in touch with those sources. Because not only do they want to see what the story is, but they also want to know how you're actually going to write that story, and if you can actually write that story, if you can get in touch with these people who you say you're going to talk to. One thing I would avoid is sending a story directly to a publication. I remember, I think, even before I wrote the story for Huffington Post, I tried, and I think part of the reason for that, and part of the reason that I've learned over the years, is an editor wants to work with you to shape the story. So if you're just sending them a finished story, they're not really going to work with that, because they would probably rather work with you in the process of building and writing that story. So those would be my main tips. Make sure you're emailing the correct editor at a publication. Make sure the story you're pitching, and be concise in your email. Definitely tell them exactly what the story is you're going to talk to, but don't write the full story out and send it to them.
Yeah, those tips are so incredibly helpful, and I'm sure they're going to help a ton of people who are trying to figure out their way in getting started with freelancing and getting started with writing and journalism. So I really appreciate you sharing that. How did you figure out, when you were freelancing and starting out until now, how did you figure out what to charge for your pieces, how to develop out your rate? Because that kind of information is never available.
I can totally talk about that. Yeah, so I'd say determining your rate can be a difficult thing, especially starting out. But there are ways to negotiate your rate. So a lot of the times when you pitch a story to a publication, they're going to respond to you and they're going to say, hey, we typically pay freelancers this much for this type of story. Is that okay with you? And you do have the ability to respond to that and tell them that you've been paid this much at a different publication for a similar type of story. And they may be responsive to that. They may understand that you're actually worth more than they typically pay, or perhaps what they say they typically pay is not exactly what they typically pay. So you definitely have the ability to respond and say, this is how much I've been paid before. Would it be possible to increase the rate? At the same time, I wouldn't be too threatening or aggressive about it. I would never say, hey, I was paid this much at a different publication, so I'll take the story there if you don't pay me this much. Obviously, it's possible that you can take the story there if they don't pay you this much. But I think the reality is if you're just starting out freelancing, it can be hard to have such a large presence initially that you have the ability to take your story directly to another publication if one doesn't pay a certain amount of money. So I think that type of negotiating where you tell them your rate in advance, that is good. But I think that might be something that you can do once you've already written a few stories rather than on your first story. But one thing I do have to say is I think that rate varies so much. And I think that a lot of people would be shocked by how much the rate for stories vary. I know that my first story that I ever freelanced, which was a Huffington Post story, I received more money for that story than I have any other story I've freelanced. And when they first responded and said how much I would be paid for the story, I was shocked. I was like, oh my gosh, I need to freelance all the time. But it turned out that other publications didn't necessarily pay as much as that editor did for that story. And then when I spoke to some other people who freelanced for Huffington Post, their rates were different as well. They got paid a different amount of money for a different type of story. So I think that, like, ultimately, it often just depends on how much the editor has budgeted and how much the editor can pay you. But at the same time, it's definitely possible to respond and to tell them how much you've been paid previously and what you typically expect from a story like the one you're writing. And I know there are also forums online, and there are, I forgot what it was. This is not very helpful, but there was, I think I saw a Google Sheets online that had rates of various different stories, or it might have even been an article. This is not very helpful, but if you Google freelance rates for publications, you'll often be able to find what a publication has paid writers in the past, and that can give you a good indication of what they'll likely pay you or what you should expect from that publication.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and I'm sure a lot of people will look that up if I can find it. I will put it down in the show notes. But I think we on because I want to hear so much about, you know, the work you do now and your major focus, which is obviously on influencer and social media spaces, specifically as they pertain to Gen Z. And I know the world's a little crazy right now, but it means people are on social a lot more. There's a lot going on with TikTok. And honestly, I'm just going to let you take it away. What do you want to talk about? What's fascinating you the most right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely a lot more people are on social media right now. And just talking to a few of my friends, like a lot of people kind of make fun of the idea of like becoming super popular on TikTok or like becoming TikTok famous. But talking to a lot of my friends right now, some people are like, actually, this is a really good time to start a social media career because a lot of people have a lot of extra time on their hands right now. And everyone's on Instagram, everyone's on social media all day. So one of my friends started posting a lot of TikToks, and they weren't dance videos, they were funny videos. And within, I think probably 3 days and like 10 videos, one of the videos already received 50,000 views and he was getting hundreds of followers. So I think it's totally possible right now, if you're thinking about starting a career on social media and some sort of influencer career, now I think would be the time to do it. And also, the one thing I'll say about TikTok and why TikTok would be a great place for Gen Z people to start is TikTok forces you essentially to view content from people you don't follow. And that is what makes it so different than Instagram. Because on Instagram, you choose to follow someone and then you see the content of the people you follow. When you open TikTok, it immediately shows you videos and content from people you don't follow. Or if people, some of them maybe you follow, but a lot of them you don't follow. And that's why it's so, I never want to say it's easy to go viral on TikTok because I don't believe that's true. But that's why it's easier for a video to blow up on TikTok than for a photo to blow up on Instagram. So yeah, that's one thing I'll say about TikTok right now. And it's really crazy because I think that like last year, a lot of people hadn't even like heard of TikTok. This time last year, I mean, people had heard of TikTok, but it was nowhere as popular as it was today. And the people who are famous on TikTok now, like Addison Rae, Charlie, Dixie, like a lot of them only had a few thousand followers on the platform last year. Now they have millions of followers on both TikTok and Instagram. And I think that like in the Instagram world that people my age grew up in, I'm 20, we grew up in a world where influencers took years to build on Instagram and on YouTube, and no one became famous overnight. I mean, people became famous fast, but no one really became famous overnight. And what's changing now is like there's this new possibility to literally become famous overnight, where you can gain a million TikTok followers within the span of a few months, and those will convert to Instagram followers as soon as you tell people to follow your Instagram, and Instagram followers mean money. So I think that that's a really interesting landscape to look at right now. How, and if TikTok will stay like that, because I think like more people will get on the platform, and then will it be as easy? And again, I hesitate to use the word easy in terms of going viral, but like, will it continue to be as easy to go viral? Or will the people who are currently at the top right now stay at the top and dominate the field, which is totally possible. Another thing, I'm really just giving random thoughts right now, but another thing that I've been thinking about and talking to a few other people about is the fact that TikTok shows you videos from people you don't follow immediately, and whether or not Instagram would implement something similar. I know that a few years ago, Instagram did do a test on this where you would be scrolling through your feed and you would like a photo and it said, hey, because you like this, you may also like this. And it would kind of direct you to a photo or an account from the explore page. And I think that if Instagram did that, then it would be easier to grow on Instagram. But at the same time, I don't necessarily think that that is what Instagram will do. So yeah, those are, if you have more, I would love to, like, to talk more about TikTok if you have more specific questions. Otherwise, I'll keep giving random thoughts. I can.
I love random thoughts because it kind of gives me a sense, especially for you, and obviously your focus for writing your beat is on this space. So hearing what you have top of mind and what you've been thinking about is always so fascinating. So I do that to a lot of people. I'm like, just tell me all of the thoughts in your head right now. I'd love to hear them.
One more before getting into a specific question that I was thinking a lot about, because someone asked me the other day, they're like, so are these TikTok stars, how do they make money? Can you make money on TikTok? And obviously, or not obviously, but you used to be able to send money on TikTok. People could go live and you could get sent money, but they changed the rules and they said you have to be 18 to do that. You have to be 18 to send money. You have to be 18 to receive money. A lot of the stars aren't 18. A lot of the viewers aren't 18. So that kind of dampened that source of income. But now what I really think is a lot of the famous TikTokers have huge Instagram followings, and also the way that they're gonna be able to make a living off their fame is like through Instagram, in my opinion. And then later on, TikTok will catch up, and later on, ads on TikTok will be as valuable as they are on Instagram. But right now, I think brands don't pay as much for TikTok ads, but TikTokers can still make money other ways. But yeah, ask the question. I just interrupted you.
Well, actually, kind of on that, in that vein, I've been really interested to see kind of the TikTokers who have blown up, say like the Hype House TikTokers, for example. Some of them have started as YouTubers and now they're known as TikTokers. Other ones like Charlie have now created a YouTube channel and now they're making YouTube videos on top of, you know, having a massive Instagram following and a massive TikTok following. And I'm kind of interested to know from your perspective how you see those different platforms being prioritized for that generation of influencers, because I know obviously monetization is so much more strongly built into YouTube than it is to Instagram just because of AdSense. Yeah. But then Instagram, the money you can get from partnership brand deals is so much larger than you can get from TikTok. Yeah. So I find it personally really interesting that they're already diversifying their platforms and their content in the way that they are. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and how that may develop out. So like, what if TikTok's just a fad? Do you think they'll maintain that following?
Yes. So I thought about this quite a bit yesterday. James Charles uploaded a video with Addison Rae, and he's also done a video with Charli D'Amelio before, and these videos are obviously mutually beneficial because James will get more followers from Addison and Addison will get more followers from James. But what I found most interesting about the video that he did yesterday when he was doing Addison's makeup is he asked Addison to introduce herself, and she introduced herself as a social media influencer. She did not introduce herself as a TikToker. And then James clarified, oh, so you started on TikTok, like, tell us about that. And then she went into telling everyone about TikTok. But the fact that she introduced herself as a social media influencer rather than a TikTok influencer kind of showed, or rather than a TikTok creator, showed me that she was trying to diversify her platform beyond TikTok. She also made sure to mention in the video that she had her own YouTube channel, and then she uploaded a video with James Charles as well. So I think that, like, right now there definitely is, like, a lot of pressure on these TikTokers to diversify onto other platforms, because not only can you monetize directly on YouTube, and not only are brand deals much more lucrative on Instagram than they are on TikTok, but I think that maybe there is a fear that TikTok as a platform will cease to exist, like Vine cease to exist. But if they want to continue being influencers and being internet stars, they can do that on YouTube and they can do that on Instagram. I don't think TikTok will go under. I think TikTok's doing really well right now, and I think everyone's loving TikTok. But if you look at Vine, everyone loved Vine. And the reality was Vine no longer exists. But, and a lot of social media, a lot of Vine stars are not as famous on Instagram, but some are. Ricky Thompson, for example, started on Vine. And now he has almost 6 million followers on Instagram, and he posts really funny videos on Instagram. So I think that Addison, Charlie, and the other TikTokers are kind of following a similar pattern where they're building on TikTok, but now that they have such a large audience on TikTok, they're pretty much the most followed TikTok. They're hoping to use that to build on YouTube, to build on Instagram, and those platforms will allow them to actually monetize their career right now and also solidify it in a different space in case TikTok suddenly is not as successful as people thought it would be.
Yeah, I mean, I love all of that. I could talk about this for literal years, but unfortunately, we are out of time for now. literally, I'm going to need to have you back next season because we know the whole social media influencer landscape is going to be completely different by then.
Yeah.
So we will have a whole new set of things to talk about.
We will.
But before I let you go, can you let everyone know where they can find you on the internet, where they can find your work, etc., so they can stalk you?
Totally. And thank you so much for having me. Well, on Instagram, I'm at James Wellemeyer, and I'll spell my last name, Wellemeyer. And on Twitter, I'm J_Wellemeyer. You can't find me on TikTok yet. I stick to watching the videos, but I am thinking of making a few during quarantine.
I really think you need to. As someone who's just made a few as well, it's worth the fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being on. This has been wonderful. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Generation Slay. I really appreciate you taking some time out of your, I'm sure, very busy schedule to tune in. And I hope you'll take a quick sec to subscribe so that we'll see you on the episode next week. And, you know, if you liked it, pop down to the review and leave a little comment, leave a hopefully 5-star review. It's super, super helpful on my end. Just because, you know, the more reviews I have, the more it gets pushed out on podcast platforms to other wonderful Gen Slayers who would definitely, definitely learn and gain so much from hearing these interviews. So by leaving a review, by subscribing, you know, you're helping a girl out and you're helping a whole other wonderful community of Gen Zers out as well. So I'm sure they'd appreciate it if you did it too. Until next week, I would love to see you over on our social channels at Generation Slay everywhere. You'll see some fun motivational content. You'll see some activism now because of the world we live in. And hopefully you'll see some wonderful Instagram story takeovers, Q&As, days in a life from our amazing guests. So if you want to see any of that, pop on over to our socials, and I'll see you next week. Bye!